Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning, discussing all things, or Monday morning, discussing all things Nashville Predators. Taking your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in our friend Alex Doherty from the Tennessean. Alex, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I am a little bit under the weather. I don't know exactly where it came from, but I cannot rule out the possibility that Luke Shen got me sick.
I was gonna say, like, this is this an extension of Luke Shen's maybe some problems he was having in Game 5?
I don't know for sure, but I can tell you this: if I was having to cover a Game 7 in Vancouver right now, it would have been miserable. It would have been terrible. So it's blessing in disguise.
Well, we appreciate very much you taking time to power through with us this morning here on the program. So let's just start with the series. Now that it's over, your thoughts on the series for the Predators against Vancouver, and now kind of with that in the backdrop leading into what sort of an offseason you think this is for the Predators, given the 18-game point streak down the stretch, the age of the roster, the decisions in front of Barry Trotz. How do you view where the Predators sit after this series?
Yeah, very strange series. I mean, if you think about the last 2 weeks, the roller coaster that everyone went on from the Predators side, the Vancouver side. I mean, after Game 1, it felt like it might be a short series, but then we find out about Thatcher Demko, and the whole tone changes. And then, you know, they win Game 2, and it's like, oh, here we go. The Predators are in the driver's seat, and then they just completely fall on their face at home. I think this series tells us a little bit about maybe, and this, I think this, what I see from the series tells me a little bit about maybe Barry Trotz is not going to try to do the same thing he did last summer. I mean, I like the fact that Barry Trotz was willing to try to go get the pieces that he wanted in the building, like Ryan O'Reilly and Gus Nyquist and Luke Shen, to build the roster to win now. But I think maybe that kind of series tells him that, like, there's a lot more work to do here. And it's not necessarily about, like, just going out and getting known commodities. You've got to find, you know, the next level of player in your own system in order to find a way. I mean, like, the Canucks, most of that roster, most of it, not all of it, but most of that roster is all homegrown. I mean, there's a lot of guys that were top draft picks, a lot of guys that weren't, and they, you know, they went out and got Elias Lindholm, but, like, most of those guys are people that they you know, drafted or developed over time. So I think he knows that he's going to have to. I mean, this series to me is like, it's a combination. It's a weird combination of the Predators as built by David Poile, and then the Predators as repaired or remodeled by Barry Trotz on the fly. I think you have to look at it and say this roster was good, but it's still not good enough. And, you know, you've got a great coach. I mean, the fact that this series was so even when the roster differential was pretty great, in my opinion, tells you you've got a great coach in Brunette. I mean, he knows what he's doing. He's got game plan ability. He's got the ability to adjust on the fly, matchups, all that stuff. He knows what he's doing. You've got a great coach. So you've got to improve this roster 20%, 30%, 40% more in the offseason in order to really feel like you can make a deep run in the playoffs.
So do you look at it, Alex, like it's almost – I mean, first of all, I guess I start to ask this question. It's obvious the goalie question, you kind of start there. But do you look at it like Trotz could choose to, okay, build on this? You have O'Reilly coming off a great year. You have Nyquist coming off a career year. You have these veterans who played very well this year, not as well in the playoff series, but very well this year. And so you enhance that, you add to it, and you let the young guys come up as they do. Or do you make the conscious decision to basically go younger and be willing to take a brief step backward, ideally brief, and see what you have there. Do you look at it that way? Like it's kind of a like an A or B there?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we know about Barry Trotz so far as year one of his general manager job is that he's much more willing to he seems like he's going to lean towards known commodities rather than just throw in younger players, right? I mean, even at the trade deadline with getting Zucker and Beauvillier. So I think he probably has learned a lot in this year. I think he realized it seemed like at the deadline, let's go back to the deadline for a second, because it seemed like at the deadline he came out of that kind of assuming that he was going to be in control and could make all the moves he wanted to, and realized that, you know, general managers weren't picking up the phone and weren't dealing with him and didn't care about what they had to offer. And so now he's like, okay, well, now we have to adjust and figure out. And so now he's got the Soros situation. It might be the same situation. I mean, like, there's not a lot of teams that are really in on Soros. I mean, like, sure, a lot of teams will be willing to listen, but the realistic list of teams that are, like, actually going to want to trade for Soros, it's like New Jersey, Washington, maybe Toronto now. I mean, like, it's maybe a half dozen teams. It's not a lot of teams. So I think Trotz probably is going to have to reassess. I can't only just deal my way out of this. I've got to find ways to get guaranteed, you know, guys in the room that I know can make a difference. And you know, he's going to have to deal with his first, not his first, but a really important draft this year. And like, how is he going to trade some? Is he going to trade some of these picks in order to get better now? But I think Trotz maybe is going to have to reassess. Like, he can't just go into this and think like last year and sign a bunch of veterans. Like, he can't just go and, you know, get Steven Stamkos and, you know, Sam Reinhart and Jake Guentzel and be like, okay, now we're ready to go again. I think he's got to realize like we need some younger guys. We need some good young 23, 24 year old guys that can make a difference, because that was the difference with Vancouver. They had those guys. They had those guys that could play like that. And a lot of the teams that are still in it, for sure. So does that mean he tries a new avenue? Maybe he goes the offer sheet route. I know everyone loves to play pretend and imagine what could happen there. Does he go the offer sheet route? Does he go with the massive trade where he gets, you know, Cole Caulfield from Montreal or something like that? That would be intriguing. But like, I think everything's on the table with Trotz this summer.
Alex, how do you see the Soros situation playing itself out this summer? Do you think he's re-signed? Do you think that Barry Trotz wants to trade him away and go younger with Askarov? How do you view where the goaltending situation is now for the Predators in the aftermath of this season?
Yeah, I think it related to what I was just saying, like I think Trotz has to decide whether he wants the known commodity or whether he wants to try a scar off. And I think we could see a drastic change here. I'd be willing to bet that Soros is not on this team next year, as we've already seen him play his last game. And you know, obviously that means you got to sign Kevin Lankinen in for the next couple of years, give him a nice run. And that wouldn't be terrible. They wouldn't be a bottom team with Lankinen in that either. But I think Trotz probably realizes that he needs to get better skaters rather than just solidify his goaltending situation. He needs difference makers on the ice. You know, he talked about this when he was making those moves to claim these waivers guys, right? Like Jared Aaronson Dolan and Samuel Fagamo. He was like, these are just free looks at guys. You can take a look and see what they got and see if they have anything that makes a difference. Makes them different on the ice. But what skills do they have that can set them apart? You know, some guys had speed, some guys had skill and whatever. I think he knows he needs to go get a young player that is a difference maker, that is a next level, that can change momentum just because of how good they are. And now the return for Soros is not going to be great. People think it's going to be this huge thing. It's really not. I think you know, the trade that we saw bandied about Dawson Mercer from the Devils, it's going to be something like that. I mean, maybe that's fine, but I do not think he needs to give Saros a long-term deal. I think it's going to be, if I was willing to bet, I think Saros is gone and we have Lankinen and Askarov in Nashville next year.
So, Alex, as you look at what is in the organization now, how many guys and who would they be, would you look at and say, because I think we'd all agree, Luke Evangelista, the trajectory is very positive, and I think he's going to be a very good player. How many guys right now, you know, Milwaukee or not yet Milwaukee, do you look at and say, okay, that I would identify that guy as someone who could actually be one of those difference makers here in a couple of years?
Yeah. I think Tanner Mullendijk is that. I think Joachim Kimmel is that. And that might be the lift. I mean, those two are the ones that I feel like are difference makers. I don't know what their ceiling is. You could look at Fedor Svechkov as a guy. You know, he's very young still, but he had that bad injury this year. Zach LaRue is not – I wouldn't see him as a difference maker, more of like a – he can be a cheaper option to fill out the bottom of your roster. But that's it. I mean, it's just like those guys and – I mean, Ryan Ufko, I mean, like, he's pretty good at defense, but they need forwards. They need, like, just really solid offensive forwards. And the everyone was, you know, we had these – there were the three or four young players coming into the season. Juuso Parsonen, Igor Afanasyev, Filip Tomasino, Luke Evangelista. Well, you hit on one of them. You know, like, one of them is going to stick with the roster. The others, I don't know. I mean, maybe not. But – I think you have to have like that. If that's your ratio, you're going to have to just go get more guys. You know, you've got to have three or four other guys you think could make the difference. And that's what you're going to have to do. So that's about it. And I think they have to really think about how, you know, like I said before, I think they're the strategy Trotz had about like, let's go get these known commodities. Let's go get these free agents that we know are good. Ryan O'Reilly and everything. He's probably going to have to reconsider that being the move every year because he saw what it did for him. He saw it made the team good. It made the team change the room, and that's important. But you've got to get young players that are difference makers. And right now they don't have enough.
Well, Alex, great stuff, man. Appreciate you playing hurt with us this morning and powering through, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much. All right, I'm going to go take a nap now.
Alex Doherty from Tennessee and our guest on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll react to what Alex had to say. More of your thoughts on the Preds coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Monday morning. Taking your thoughts on the Preds. Appreciate Alex Doherty from the Tennessee and for being with us in the last segment. So, Joe, you brought up a team that I think is a really good example of kind of like the perfect area of what you're looking for. Like the Dallas Stars, who were Central Division champions this year, my preseason pick to win the Stanley Cup, just won Game 7 last night against Vegas. They got really good veteran players, right? Like they've got your Jamie Benns and Sagans and Joe Pavelski and Suter and Duchesne. Like they've got a lot of guys that have played a ton of hockey before. They also have Jason Robertson, who is 24 years old. Roope Hintz, who's a young player. They have Wyatt Johnston, who is unbelievable in the first round against Vegas, who's a young player. They've got Heiskanen on the back end, who's a young player. They've got Stankoven, who's a young player. Like they're kind of the perfect blend right now of established veteran player and really, really good young player on their roster. The Predators certainly are not that. The question is, how do you get to that? And I wonder what something that Alex brought up there. If you're Barry Trotz viewing this season, like Barry Trotz knows that at some point your younger players and your draft picks have to be that next wave coming in to take over if you're ever going to get to where you want to get to win a championship. He knows that. He's not ignorant of that. So with that in the background, if you're Barry Trotz, how do you view this season in terms of where you're at with your young players? Because it is an interesting point that Alex brings up. I mean, Evangelista started the year. Parsonen, Tomasino, Afanasyev didn't start the year with the team, but he came up at some point. Like, you had Cody Glass. There was some expectation on him this year. You had some young guys. This was a younger team to begin the year than it was that finished the year. So how do you view that if you're Barry Trotz in terms of what you saw from those young guys this year and where that could be leading you moving forward here? Because really, the one guy at forward, and I think it's a little bit different on defense, you know, Stasny came in, and I think they're excited about what he's going to be. But the one guy at forward that stuck all year that was really a young player was Evangelista, and that's pretty much it. So how do you view that if you're Barry Trotz in terms of what that means for you moving forward?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And, I mean, one thing, too, is Trotz is new, but largely the organization, the scouting network and everything is the same, right? Should he have changed more of that? Should he change more of that? I mean, I think that that's also worth talking about in the long-term view, in the big picture, but – and it's so much of like how many of these guys does he believe are going to be difference makers, as Alex already said. I think that's a great way to put it, difference makers. I think Evangelista will be, and Kemmel, I think we all identify that. I watch Kemmel play because, of course, I obsessively watch the Milwaukee Admirals.
You do,
and he is. I think you can see it with him, no question. If we want to talk about young guys, I do think that Stasny is looking real good. I like his future. And obviously, as he mentioned, Molendijk as well. But it just, a lot of these guys have kind of, you do wonder, like, are you cycling to the point where it's like, okay, well, they're good enough to maybe be in the league, but like a Tomasino, everybody says, well, he's young, you got to wait and see. But at some point, you got to see more, right?
Yeah.
You got to see more from somebody.
We've reached that point with him.
And where are we with Cody Glass? What's the evaluation on him? I mean, I think he's a solid player, but guys who are like, okay, I could see that guy at least being like a middle six forward, right?
Yep. For sure.
And like Alex said, I don't see enough of it, so it's just so interesting in terms of this offseason, what's the move then? Because, of course, you can't just every year try to go out and get veteran guys. I mean, I think it totally makes sense what Trotz did in retrospect. Totally makes sense what he did. And I think it worked. It worked extremely well.
I agree.
But it's still not addressing the core issue.
Well, to Alex's point, I don't think it's something that you replicate now, right? Like, I'm not saying the Predators go out in free agency this year and they don't spend any money. Like, I think they will, and I think they should. Like, you should always be open to identifying the right pieces to bring into your group. And if you feel like there's somebody that you really want in free agency, Stamkos is probably a bad example because I don't think he's going to get there. But, like, somebody of that ilk. Like, if you identify somebody that you really want in free agency, then I'm all for the Predators trying to go get that guy. But at some point, your younger players are going to have to either step up and take hold some of these roles, or you got to find some new younger players, right? Like, that's what makes this so interesting. Look, I would be willing to bet, and I don't have any inside information on this, but I've said this all year long. One thing you got to keep in mind is a lot of these young guys that we're talking about, almost all of them that we're talking about, were not drafted by Barry Trotz. My guess is that when next season rolls around, there's going to be one or two of them that are not here anymore. And I don't know who that is. I don't know exactly what the plan is going to be there, but there's probably going to be one or two of them that are gone. And I'm not just talking about veteran players, probably some young players there too. So how much rearranging, kind of shuffling of the deck does Trotz want to do? Like, at some point, like, you have to have a Kemmel, a Matthew Wood. And look, I'm excited about Molendijk too on defense, but specifically at forward. Like, you got to find some forwards that are game-changing type of players. And for too long in this franchise, drafting and developing young forwards, not just to be good players, but to be great players, has been really difficult to come by. And it's a different regime now. You've got Trotz, you've got Brunette. Like there's no body of work for them to this point to judge how good or not good they're going to be at doing that. But if you're ever going to get to a point where you're consistently getting past the second round, which, like I said, they have been past one time in the history of their franchise, the answer is you have to identify and develop game-changing elite-level forwards. And the other part to that, Joe, is we know what they're drafting now. They're at number 22. They have the 22nd pick in the first round coming up. And can you identify and develop those forwards when you're picking as late as they're picking in the draft? I mean, that's the question we come back to every year.
All right. And last year, Trotz clearly tried to move up. I mean, there was no secret at all.
Yep.
He was trying to get up there, and he just couldn't do it. And so it's just not as easy as it, you can talk about it, but it's a lot easier or a lot more difficult to actually pull it off. You mentioned Trotz and Brunette together. Like you said, we don't know. We saw a good year of hockey, and it's an encouraging start. But in terms of finding these guys, identifying them, and all that stuff, so, and I think it's important to note Brunette is he's going to be a big part of that, right?
Yes.
I mean, he's a guy who's been in the front office, so it's not like he's had different roles too. But the struggles of the Preds over the long term, how much of that, I guess, would you put some of that on Trotz because he was the coach for all those years when two of the three areas they were really strong in and one of them they weren't?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, certainly when you start to list off areas that he's going to have to prove, that's one of them, right? Like you have to prove that you can identify and draft elite level forwards. And look, the easy answer is the Predators have never been at the top of the draft where they've had a chance to do this. And I get that, and I think that's certainly a big part of it. You can also identify forwards later in the draft. I mean, look around the league. There are a lot of guys that were taken late first round, second round, fifth round, like whatever you want to do. Like there are guys that you have to identify, and that's where it comes down to your scouting staff, where it comes down to you as a general manager, Andrew Brunette's coach, of identifying players that you feel like could be those guys for you. We heard Barry Trotz talk about it last year, right? Bring me some big swings. Like I want to take some risks and find some guys that are going to work out. And when you operate that way, there are going to be some that are total whiffs, right? Like you're going to miss on some. But your hope is that you can identify two or three that become foundational pieces of your franchise. And that's going to be really important for them to do over the next 5 years here. Robbie and Rexroad taking your thoughts on the Preds, 615-737-1025, our phone number. More coming up next. This is 1025-1063, The Game. Join Cromwell Media along with local athletes and musicians at Hermitage Golf Course on June the 20th for the 615 Open. You can make a difference while supporting Souls for Souls. Every $20 raised goes to a new pair of shoes for a local child experiencing homelessness. For more information, to sign up to play or to sponsor, visit 615open.com. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road coming up here in about 10 minutes. Corey Curtis from News 2 at 8 o'clock. To kick off the 8 o'clock hour for his weekly visit. All that coming up. Taking your thoughts on the Pred, 615-737-1025. Joe, lots of people making the Predators drafting forwards to Titans drafting wide receivers comparison on the text line. There is a little bit of a comparison there. James on the text line says, it all boils down to this year having a rookie general manager, rookie head coach with a lackluster offensive ability outside of about four players. We need to bolster our top six forwards, get some more youth in our defensive core. As far as Saros and Askarov conversation, I'd ride with Askarov. I love Juice, but it has already been said that Askarov could be league-changing. The thing about the defense core is it's really interesting here, and this is a decision for Trotz that we've not even really brought up yet. Fabro's under contract for next year. Shen, obviously, is under contract. Yossi, McDonough. I mean, Lozon's under contract. You got a lot of your spots spoken for. You would assume that Spencer Stastny is going to make the team out of camp. I would be shocked if he doesn't make the team out of camp. So there's six right there. What about Carrier? Carrier is an unrestricted free agent. I thought he was up and down in the playoffs for the most part all season. I thought he was pretty good. So are you re-signing Alex Carrier? Andrew Burnett clearly loves him, was talking about it after the game. Like, are you signing Carrier and then having your seven defensemen basically spoken for next year? Could Fabro, even though he's signed, could he be dealt in the offseason? Like, Barry's an unrestricted free agent. He's going to be gone. Like, he's not going to be back. But your defense is almost kind of spoken for at this point. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Would you leave more roster flexibility? How do you view that part of it if you're Barry Trotz?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing too, for sure. It's funny. A couple of those guys you mentioned, I think we both thought at different times they would not still be here now.
Yep.
And, you know, Carey, of course, had a great moment in the series, a bad moment in the series, but, you know, he's been a solid player. That's a big question. You know, the forward receiver comparison, I do need to hit that for a second. So in the Titans' time here, you would look at D-Mace.
Yep.
Because I believe he was drafted. Yeah, he was drafted right as they were coming here. And A.J. Brown as the two obvious success stories. They drafted and became great players. Who would those two forwards be for the Preds?
In terms of players they drafted?
Yeah, it have to be, have to be guys they drafted.
See, that's the point. Like, Forsberg was not drafted by them, so it's not him.
Arvidsson one of them?
Is on the list. You know, Fiala, more for what he's done after he left here.
But at least he was a well-drafted
right.
Like forward.
Hornquist, I think, was the last pick in the draft, and he was a really good player. Hartnell was a good player. But to your point, they have never drafted an elite forward, ever. Like, they've never drafted one. Like, Forsberg, is he McDavid-level elite? No. But, I mean, he had an elite year. He put up 48 points. He put up 48 goals over 90 points. Like, he's a great player. They didn't draft him, though. Now, do they get credit for developing him? And yeah, probably. He was here when he's 18, right? So, I mean, they did the developing on him. But to your point, like,
Great move, great trade.
Yeah, for sure. Like, they've never really drafted the elite of the elite forward, ever.
And like you said, obviously, you know, if you get to the top of the draft in the right year, I mean, even I'm watching Lafreniere yesterday, and it's like, yeah, he's becoming, you know, like, he was the top of the draft, not the ideal top of the draft forward, but he's a good player. But the Preds haven't had a lot of chances like that.
Well, and look, the last time they were really, really high, I think, was 2013 when they were picking fourth overall. And the way the board fell, like, nobody knew what was going to happen. Like, there was talk about Seth Jones going one. There was talk about Seth Jones going three. There was a lot that could have happened. And the way that it shook out was McKinnon one, Barkov two, and then Drew in three, Jones four. Like, had Barkov been there, they probably would have took him. Had McKinnon been there, they would have took him. But it just didn't work out that way.
Yeah. But also, to your point, there's plenty of guys. I mean, what was Stamkos? He was
he's pretty high pick.
Okay,
but I thought Kucherov was not. Like,
Kucherov was, yeah, that's why I got it mixed up. Kucherov was a lower pick. I mean, and even like Yossi, who's the greatest defenseman in franchise history, second round pick.
Exactly.
So if you're good at it, you can find these certainly guys who can be difference makers, even if they're not, you know, Hall of Famers. And that the absence of that is really it just can't be seen as some kind of coincidence or bad luck thing after this amount of time.
Exactly. And that leads back to what feels like an annual conversation of, can you really find that guy? Can you really find that elite forward, the number one centerman, everything we always talk about when you're picking at number 22 in the draft? And, I mean, I think we know this at this point, Joe. Like, Barry Trotz is probably not going to be willing to strip this thing down. And based on their contract situation right now, you can't. Like, Yossi's there. Forsberg's there. O'Reilly's got 3 years left on his deal. Like, they're not going to be bad enough to have one of those top picks. So how do you get to the place where you find some of these game-changing forwards when that's the case? The one thing I will say, and I've said this at the trade deadline too, every now and then there's some players that come available that, based on their assets they have with their draft pick, based on, I think, some of their young prospects, and certainly based on their cap space, like, you've got an opportunity to involve yourself in trades if that comes up here. I don't know who those players are going to be. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of noise about Marner right now out of Toronto. quite frankly, I think I'd probably stay away from that. Like, watching him play in the playoffs, I don't know that he's a winning player. And he's getting paid $10.9 million per year. He's got 1 year left on his deal, and then you're going to have to pay him again. I know a lot of Predators fans are going to be preaching Marner, Marner, Marner all season. Yeah. To me, I'm probably staying away from that. That's just me.
Yeah, I don't want to overreact to one clip, but, man, the way he skated on that last play.
It's the whole series.
Or did not
skate.
Just,
he's just totally unwilling to get into the battle, which bothers me.
Yeah, there's no way that's a coincidence with some of their struggles. Greg and Brentwood brings up Rad Dillard. That's another guy who.
Yeah, he's a good player. He's not an elite player.
Right, but that's one on the positive side of the ledger.
And then
that
was
drafting
one of the guys that they drafted, and then did not go well when he just bolted for Russia.
Right, or when he went to the bar.
Yeah, well, that too. 615-737-1025, our phone number. Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad, 1025-1063, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
I almost feel bad for them. I would actually let them scream at me.
Woo! Way to go, guys!
How's your monster?
How's that going up there? I hope you enjoy some sweet tea.
Go ahead, just yell. You can throw your drink on me. It's fine.
I will. And the reason, I was down there yesterday.
Big Bird influenced me as a child.
I guess so.
Okay, can white people like rap or no, Paul?
White
is that okay?
Young white people can like it.
Well, when Wu-Tang Clan's album came out, I was 20, you a-hole.
It is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning here on the program. Joseph, the floor is yours.
Thank you for playing that, Nick Kaharsky. This rap
music, wait, like 5 years old or so? How long has rap been around? I don't know.
That was a good one. That was one of your best Kuharsky voice impressions in a long time.
You like that?
That was good.
It's just completely all over the map. It's totally random. All right. I really, it's a Monday, and I really don't have any real life experiences to complain about. You know, I'm feeling pretty good about life. So
that's good.
I'm going to keep it low key, but I do want to keep this going. We're having a good air it out conversation here on the state of the Preds. So I do have to pick out a text here. We've had a ton of reaction on the text line driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com. So I'm going to read part of this very long text. The rest of it is, I'm not reading all that, but sorry for your trouble or congratulations. Okay. Quote, morning fellas. I've never heard Bridgestone as loud as it was on Friday. It was so loud. There was like a quadruple echo running through the building. It was awesome. That being said, Jared is right. Home ice and the crowd energy. Oh, is Jared right that home ice and crowd energy don't matter? Even though the crowd gave everything they had, Preds didn't seem to feed off it. I think I realized the most Friday is that we didn't have a leadership presence. It doesn't seem like anyone stepped up and started screaming at the guys like, this is it. This is our chance. Let's get this done. End quote. No, obviously, first of all, you've immediately triggered me with that. Guys, what are you doing? I mean, if you watch the game, they spilled everything that you can spill in that game. Like, I have no issue with the Preds' effort. We just talked about Mitch Marner, and I think that's a real rarity. That's why I'm with you. I'd be buyer beware on him, because in this tournament, in this sport, if there's ever a question about, look, people make mistakes. Plenty of Preds made mistakes. Killer mistakes by the Preds. But even like Carrier in game one, that wasn't effort. He messed up,
yep.
Right? I mean, I don't think that more intensity, more, screaming or whatever, like that's not what this is.
They don't have
this
an intensity problem.
This is execution. And it is also talent, which is mostly what we've been talking about on the show. I did also, though, I wanted to ask you, Robbie, about that. It's really interesting to see. Never heard Bridgestone as loud. You know, Thomas Drantz, who covers the Canucks for us, and I don't necessarily agree with that sentiment about it being as loud as it's ever been. I've heard it louder. I thought it was really good at moments. They had the timeouts.
Yeah.
I think there was a lot of – I think the crowd was kind of lulled to sleep by the just – I mean, it was a grinder. It was a mutter of a punch you in the face, get you in a phone booth, oh, yeah. And you know that's what the series was. So I think that lent itself to actually a more subdued crowd. Thomas Drance tweeted, like, the shockingly like subdued crowd finally comes to life in the third period. I'm like, gosh, I didn't think it was that bad, but I'd like to get actually both of your thoughts on the atmosphere Friday and in three games in general, because it is amazing that the Preds can't win a freaking home playoff game anymore.
Well, it is amazing, and that we were kind of on the way out of the building Friday. We were going through their recent kind of home stretch here of playoff games. It's been bad. I mean, it's been bad basically since the 2017 final against Pittsburgh, yeah. Right? Like game six of the final, they've not been good at home in the playoffs. I thought the atmosphere was really good in games four and game six. Game three, for whatever reason, I some of it was the traffic. Like, it took a while for people to kind of get in the building for game three. And then the games, for the most part, other than game four, have been just kind of a slop fest out there. So I think that lends itself into it. I will say, I was a little disappointed in the crowd on Friday. You know, they've been clamoring all week for Run This Town, and the Predators did Run This Town. And then everybody just sat there for the whole thing through Run This Town. Like, there's no cheering. You're just sitting there watching it. And I'm like, if you guys wanted Run This Town this bad, stand up and do something. Like, you're just sitting there through the whole thing. So that was the one part where I was disappointed in the crowd on Friday. Other than that, like, I thought it was outstanding. I saw Drance's tweet. I think he was referring to game three, because there were a lot of Canucks writers and media and fans like, this is Nashville in game three? Like, this is supposed to be a lot louder. And then, you know, game four got better. Game six, I think it got better. So, like, the crowd was fine. I do think the way that the game played out has a lot to do. Like, it's hard to expect your crowd to sustain energy for 60 minutes, which I thought they did a pretty darn good job of on Friday when there are no goals to speak of. Like, that's when it's on the team to capitalize on some of that energy.
Yeah. And look, I think there's also an element when you talk about crowds at a hockey game, that was such a – that entire game was edge of your seat, I thought, because it's a 0-0 game the whole way. And think about, like, the 17 run. The Preds always scored the first goal. I swear, I don't have the stat in front of me, but they played with the lead, like, most of the time at home in that series. And so I think that also helps your crowd when it's not edge of your seat, if that makes sense to you. Maybe I'm off, but I believe that, like, the style of the game.
I agree. I think it definitely plays into it.
And just the fact that it was a 0-0 game, and you're just on the edge of your seat, you're nervous, as opposed to if you feel like, you know, you got a lead, and if you do have a lead, I think that does make a difference. But also, yeah, hockey crowds are great, and I think teams can draw energy from them, especially during those timeouts and things like that. But they don't, you know, it's not like football where you can mess up a team on third and long and get them a false start. Or basketball, to me, is the most impactful on the game, just in terms of, I just think it leads to bigger runs when you're at home. And I think it sometimes affects the officiating too,
right?
And some of those bang bang calls, it just doesn't mean as much to me, like in hockey and baseball.
Well, the bottom line is, it comes down to winning and losing, and the road team in this series won 5 out of 6 games. I mean, you're right. I mean, it's not, home ice is not unimportant. Like, there are certainly situations where I think home ice really matters, particularly like if you're having your choice at a game seven, you'd much rather have it at home than you would on the road. But clearly, like, home ice advantage in the playoffs is not everything. And one thing they got to get figured out as they move forward here, and some of this has been matchup driven, right? Like, they have not been a very good home playoff team basically since game six of the Stanley Cup final. Now, in that stretch, they had a Carolina team that was way better than they were, a Colorado team that was light years better than they were. And even in this series, it was a pretty even series, but you're talking about a wild card team taking on a division winner. One way to find a better playoff record at home is to be a higher seed, right? Like, have a better regular season, get more talent in there. That's how you get better at home in the playoffs.
Be better. That's one thing.
Right.
I personally, by the way, I think Run This Town is whatever. So, I mean, how much of this is, like, again, a few loud voices on social media, but it, it's not really what the fan base at large wanted. I don't know. But, like, I've never thought that was so amazing. But whatever. It's still better than glorious domination garbage. Kevin says, the games are so damn boring the crowd couldn't get into it. Crowd was better in 2017 because the team was better. What did you want us to get excited about? Preds got bullied and locked down. Well, I disagree that it was boring. I mean, I think if you love hockey, it was an incredibly tense, incredibly dramatic game. And it didn't have a bunch of goals, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't end-to-end skating and all these primo opportunities and things like that. But I don't know. I would disagree that that game was boring.
I agree. Look, the crowd was fine Friday. Like, they had, like, three or four standing O's in time. Like, the crowd was not an issue Friday. I mean, yeah.
Nicole Kidman was rocking.
Yeah, she was. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Corey Curtis. We'll get his thoughts on the Predators and where they go from here. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.